My mission is simple, to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. Other people want to make friends. I just want to try to make us some money. Because my job's not just to entertain, but to educate and teach you. So call me at 1-800-743-CNBC or tweet me at Jim Cramer. Oh, don't you know it? These are heady times on Wall Street. Some would say giddy times. When you consider that our president-elect is driving his own personal bull market with a message that resonates with stock buyers all over the world.
Trump stock, Trump stock, Trump stock.
Once again, we hit new records. Dow soaring 142 points, S&P gaining 0.59%, NASDAQ climbing 0.50%, like we've done every single week since the election. Yet we have had 14 record closes in the Dow since the election. 14! Six for the S&P. Next week, though, could be a wake-up call. It may be, it really may cause this rally to pause. Not necessarily collapse. There are way too many people who don't want to sell this year. They want to take profits because maybe get better tax breaks next year. And there are many institutions that simply don't own enough stock, at least to fulfill their fiduciary duties, meaning they look like idiots. Still, as early as Monday, we could get some news here that could potentially stop this rally in its tracks. Or at least that's what it would have done not that long ago. Did you know that 20 years before Christopher Columbus sailed the ocean blue, the oldest surviving bank in the world, Banca Monte dei Paschi, was founded in the Italian city-state of Siena? If you ever go to Siena, it's one of the greatest towns in the world. Got that palio, you know? And this bank is a real standout on the tour. Headquarters, it's half fortress, half palace. As befits, it's 544-year history. But after surviving the Borgias, multiple invasions of Italy by France and Spain, not to mention Napoleon, and, of course, two world wars, Monte Paschi, as people call it, is now broke. We discovered this weekend that it has to be bailed out, as there seems to be no plan right now to save it from its current form. When a bank goes bust in Italy, everyone connected with it gets hurt. Common stockholders get totally wiped out. Subordinated debt can be, too. Finally, the depositors can take a hit, as the deposit insurance only covers 100,000 euros, and after that, you're on your own. This, people, is not a small bank. It has $48 billion in public debt. Take a monstrous hit. I think the situation could force Italy to take action. Can they really let the oldest bank in the world fail? Italy is the third largest bond market on earth. This is the third largest bank in Italy. I just don't think there's enough money currently in the till to get something done without a huge amount of pain in anything even remotely involved with Monte Paschi. That's right. Italy's once again on the verge of financial collapse. Yeah, no one cares. Really big deal. Excuse me. There was a time when this was all we would be talking about. Every morning I would be talking about it and every night. It would be the focal point of everything. Other than the strong dollar hurting the earnings and the spike in interest rates, this thing would be top of mind. In that sense, though, it's just one of a couple of things that probably won't derail the bull market. I mean, will there be a wipeout? Will people care? Monte Paschi is the biggest international event hanging over this market. We will not have to wait long to find out the answer. Maybe it won't even matter. What else happens next week? The Trump rally's taking up a lot of stocks, including many we don't have a good sense of how they're currently doing. One of my favorite Trump stocks, meaning a company that really benefits from lower taxes and the ability to repatriate overseas earnings, as well as deregulation, is 3M.
Trump stock.
I've always described 3M as a core holding, a company with a stock that can be owned and put away because of its long record of innovation, increasing dividends, and all-around excellence. Now, 3M's throwing an analyst meeting. I bet we're going to hear some pretty positive projections for 2017. CEO Inge Thulin has delivered time and time and time again under difficult circumstances. I don't believe it'll be different this time. Oh, and by the way, happy birthday to Scotch Tape, which launched December 8, 1930. I've always been fond of this company because my father repped all their products, and I bet he sold more Scotch tape in his lifetime than just about anyone that was selling it during those 50 years. And, of course, there's the coming Fed meeting. Now, there was a time not that long ago when this would have been all anybody was talking about, too, a Fed meeting where we actually expect to get an interest rate hike. It would have been disastrous. I've always felt that we should hold off from raising rates until things get better. Well, here we are. Things have gotten better. We have tremendous advances in all stocks of companies that really benefit from a rate hike, namely the banks. So we're in the odd position that we'll actually have a pretty horrific sell-off in this bull market's most extended group, the banks, if we don't get a rate hike. In fact, we want to hear that the Fed's seeing better growth and it might even tighten some more in the future. Can you imagine that what ailed us only a few months ago is now welcomed by the market? But that's what growth does. So Chairwoman Yellen, bring on your quarter point hike. We're ready for you. Next up, have you noticed that General Electric, unlike so many other industrials, has failed to break out, even as it stands to have huge gains under soon-to-be President Trump? Maybe that can change when the company holds its analyst meeting on Wednesday. I'd love to hear about bigger dividends, buybacks, possible acquisitions, as well as the spinoff of its energy business, which will be combined with Baker Hughes, the Exxon Oil Service firm. We certainly need to hear something more positive than the meager penny dividend boost we got today. I mean, come on. Thursday's the big day for earnings next week. And also for analyst meetings, frankly. After the close, we hear from Adobe and Oracle. I've come to think of Adobe as the quintessential Internet of Things, machine learning, artificial intelligence company. Given all the data it sees, just witness how it's become the arbiter of whether Black Friday's any good. I think this cloud-based company run by the excellent Shantanu Narayen will tell a fabulous story, befitting the strength of the business that he outlined back in October when we talked to him in San Francisco. We'll also hear from Oracle, and it could be a day to boast as Oracle has now successfully acquired NetSuite, which does cloud-based small to medium-sized relationship management software. That combination of these two companies could give them some bragging rights about the size of their cloud business. Now, I'm concerned about the ton of big enterprise spending on software ever since that Workday forecast cut. Workday competes with Oracle. I wonder if they're seeing some of the same weakness. If it isn't, though, I expect Oracle to advance smartly after they report. We've got three important and investable analyst meetings on Thursday, so listen up. Delta, CVS, that's the Charlie Victor con, and Danaher. You know I like the airlines very much, and some of them had amazing moves, but not Delta. It's only up about 1.5% this year. It sells at just 9x earnings. If Delta says it's seeing some of the same trends that Southwest Gary Kelly told us here the other day, you might have a really good trade in Delta, DAL. Danaher is a very well-run manufacturer of proprietary instruments that recently spun off its less proprietary divisions into a company called Fortive. I think the new Danaher will have an amazing story to tell. CVS is so beaten up in part because it owns a pharmacy benefit manager, and that group has become a lot more competitive. Plus,
not a Trump stock, not a Trump stock.
I turned negative on the company for a while, but you know what? Down 18, too late, probably a buying opportunity. Finally, few groups have been hotter than agricultural equipment. You know we believe in what Martin Riesenhagen has done for AGCO, cutting costs, buying back stocks at fabulous prices in retrospect. Well, it looks like we aren't the only believers. The stock is now up 32% for the year. Geez, I feel terrific about that because we've been front and center believers to the point of even taking a spin, or at least sitting in one of those monster trucks he brought over. I doubt Martin will throw cold water on the move at this analyst day, but I know that you are getting a little late to the party if you come in here. Here's the bottom line. It's been a remarkable 5 weeks since this election. The market's an energizer bunny, fueled by tweets and nominations for cabinet posts and terrific data about the broader economy. But coming up, we have the most fraught week since the election. So try not to let your giddiness get the best of you. Sarah and Pedro in Connecticut. Sarah and Pedro!
Booyah, Jim!
Based on yesterday's RH earnings and guidance, Jim, what do you think? Buy more shares or sell existing shares?
Now, I didn't like that Restoration Harbor. That conference call was really one of those. I got Pedro, listen to me. On that conference call, they just said, listen, we're just not doing it right at all. They even had bad sales after the election. The only retailer in all the group that I think. Sarah, what do you think? Have you been by their stores lately? Sarah?
Hello.
Well, anyway, that was good. It was kind of like, you know, a joint thing. It was like, car karaoke kind of thing. You know what I mean? All right. Harden. Craig. Yep.
Yeah. Like
Craig in Rhode Island. Craig.
Happy greetings from the Ocean State. I'd just like to tell you, I'm a very loyal watcher of CNBC. Thank you for taking my call. My question is, many financials have doubled from their 52-week low. That would mean Citigroup would go to at least 70. Your thoughts, Professor Kramer?
I think it goes higher than that. My Chapel Trust owns Citi. This is run by Mike Corbett. The book value is 64. If it went to a premium to the book like all the others, this stock would see 70. I say not just hold on to Citi, but
buy.
And not just because.
Trump stock.
Phil in my home state of New Jersey. Phil.
Dr. Kramer, how are you, my friend? Happy Friday.
I always like to get a doctorate now and then. Happy Friday right back. What's up?
Thank you, bro. Yeah, I'm calling. I purchased Ulta Cosmetics before the earnings at around $263.
All right.
And after the earnings came out, the stock was up $16. It quickly sold off. Same thing happened last quarter. Good guidance, beat earnings, and it sold off. Now, past week and a half, it's been down. It hasn't even participated, even though the rally's been spreading around. It hasn't participated in the rally at all.
No, and Phil, we got to deal with this. Let me tell you the problem here. People want those retailers that were doing badly that can now do well because the economy's better. They don't want the consistent ones. Ulta's consistent. I'm banking with Mary Dillon. It may not happen again. Another leg up right now. But that company had a fantastic quarter. We're never going to sell good companies just because this stock ain't doing much right now. All right, the Trump rally.
Trump stock.
Keeps going and going and going. But next week could be the biggest test yet for a post-election momentum. So I want you to keep your eyes on the data and on Monty Paskey. On Mad Money Tonight, just like Barbara Streisand, memories light the corner of my mind. I'm looking back at Hess's battle with Elliot Management. See what implications it could have for the activist stake in Marathon Peak. Then, there seems to be plenty of bull markets to choose from in this Trump rally. But what? The bear markets. Are there opportunities lurking? I'm eyeing the tech sector to see if it's time to do some buy. And it's one of my absolute favorite companies, and they're joining me tonight. Don't miss my exclusive with one of the greatest oil independents in the world, Cimarex. Stick with Craig.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on Twitter. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Tweets. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
Last week, we spoke with Gary Heminger, the CEO of Marathon Petroleum, a big oil refiner, and we talked about all the things that have driven this stock's magnificent rally over the past month. By the way, that rally's only continued since our interview. But I mention this because one of the things driving Marathon Pete higher, beyond the fact that they just got a new pro-petroleum president, is the emergence of an activist investor, namely Paul Singer's Elliott Management. They announced a 4% stake in the company roughly 3 weeks ago. That sent the stock up 9%. However, this move into Marathon Petroleum also gave many people with longer memories pause. Because the truth is, this isn't the first time Elliott Management has tried to run an activist campaign with an energy company. And the most recent public tussle with Hess, which dates back to early 2013, has been, as we say on Mad Money, pretty suboptimal. At least as of the end of September, Hess remains Elliott's third largest position, and they're Hess's second largest shareholder. But to use less diplomatic language, this investment, not so hot. So given how worked up everyone's gotten about this fund's involvement with Marathon Petroleum, tonight I want to use Elliott's experience with Hess as a case study for you to show you what can go wrong, even when there's a very smart activist pushing for something to happen. Now, Elliott Management announced their stake in Hess in January of 2013. That was at a time when the stock was trading in the low to mid-50s. Initially, this investment was a huge success. Stock spiked up to 105 in July of 2014. And if Elliott had just sold everything right there, that would be in this story. But they hung on. And as the price of oil collapsed, so too did Hess's stock price. The darn thing is now down more than 50% from its highs. And this is after the stock has run up tremendously in recent weeks, courtesy of the Trump rally, boosting all things oil and OPEC production freeze, helping to push up the price of crude. In short, they got into the stock probably in the low 50s, and now 3 years later, 62 and change. Well, it's ballpark. Elliott Management probably has about a 20% gain in Hess during a period where the S&P 500 is up more than 60%. All right, that's better than a sharp stick in the eye, but it's not necessarily the kind of performance we would expect from the smartest activist around. So what happened? When Elliott announced their stake in Hess 3 years ago, the company was already in the middle of a multi-year restructuring effort that included selling off many of their non-core assets, meaning midstream and downstream businesses not related to finding oil and gas, and then pumping them out of the ground. Then Elliott Management comes in, announces their 4% stake, releases their usual letter, which in this case was incredibly scathing. They said Hess was materially undervalued because of a lack of focus, poor execution. They argued Hess should sell off a lot more assets in order to unlock value. Over the next few months, Elliott got into a pretty public fight with the company's chairman and CEO, John Hess, namesake, with open letters to shareholders flying from both sides, along with threats of a proxy fight. Now, as of all of this was unfolding, Hess announced, and I quote, the culmination of a multi-year strategic transformation into a pure-play exploration production company, end quote, meaning they were going from being a diversified, integrated oil to simply one more exploration production play, presumably to placate the guys at Elliott Management. Hess also increased the dividend by 150%, authorized a $4 billion buyback. Again, they figured moves that Elliott wanted to see. After agreeing to these changes, they were finally able to reach a deal with Elliott in the early morning hours, right before the company's annual meeting, giving the activist fund three of the company's 14 board seats, which Hess chose to do to avoid a proxy fight. From that point on, it almost seems as if Elliott was pretty much in control, and the asset sales only accelerated. Hess sold its energy marketing business in East Coast, its St. Lucia terminals, its Indonesia offshore assets, 2013. In 2014, the company sold a big heap of Utica shale acreage, Thailand production assets. But the most surprising move, and the one that most reflects Elliott's influence, came in May of 2014, when Hess sold its retail business to that iconic chain, more than 1,300 gas stations, to ironically Marathon Petroleum for $2.6 billion. At the same time, Hess announced it was raising its buyback to $6.5 billion. Now, for those of you who remember, the timing here, horrendous. Just a few months before the price of oil peaked, Hess sold all its retail business so it could become a pure play on oil and gas, which then, of course, got absolutely hammered. Now, initially, these asset sales were a huge hit. The stock basically doubled in 18 months. Then oil peaked in June of 2014. Hess got crushed, plummeting far worse than it had done nothing to transform itself. In other words, they were acting like oil would stay expensive forever. And Hess transformed itself into a pure-play exploration production company at literally the worst time possible. Because as we saw during the downturn, it was the diversified guys, the Exxon, the Chevron, that held up best. Hess would have been one of those diversified names. But Elliott Management pressured them into becoming undiversified. No wonder the stock ended up declining 70% from 2014 peak to its trough this past January. Even worse, the share repurchases became a very public black eye for Hess. Not only were they selling off important divisions at the worst possible time, but the company was also buying back its stock aggressively at much higher prices than they could have gotten if they just waited. From August of 2013 through the end of 2014, Hess spent $5.26 billion, $5.26 billion to repurchase more than 62 million shares. Average price, 84. Even after the recent rebound, Hess is at 62. Ill time. But while the company initially used the asset sales to pay down its debt load, by 2015, they were actually borrowing money to keep doing that buyback and that increased dividend. So fast forward to this past February, what did Hess have to do? A humbled Hess needed to do a 25 million share secondary, offering at 39, part of a major fundraising effort. Okay, so let's put it all together. They bought 63 million shares in the middle 80s, and then a couple years later, they had to sell 25 million shares for less than half that price. That defines buy low, right? That defines sell low after buying high. They sold the stock all the way down here under pressure from an activist. The bottom line, no matter how smart an activist investor may seem, they're not clear of a win. Elliott's management debacle with Hess is very enlightening because at the time, it seemed like Elliott knew what it was doing. But a couple years later, it became clear that they put Hess in a really poor position to deal with the huge sell-off in oil. So when it comes to Elliott's involvement in Marathon Petroleum, remember that even the best activists can get it wrong. I'm not saying Marathon Pizza sell, just the opposite. It's terrific. But I also think that Elliott's pressure is not always a good thing. And I'm glad Heminger is taking counsel of himself, not the activist fund that almost ran Hess into the ground. All right, much more ahead. I'm searching for bargains in the bear market. Don't miss my take on the tech sector. Find out which stocks are down but not out. Then Simrex is up nearly 60% year to date. Can the company keep drilling into profits? I've got the exclusive with the CEO. And my interview with United Technologies' Greg Hayes made headlines earlier this week. Tonight I'm bringing you more of our conversation. You're not going to want to miss that. So stick with Cramer. Ever since Donald Trump shocked the world by winning the presidency a month ago, nearly the whole stock market's been in rally mode. In fact, there are almost too many bull markets to count. There's energy infrastructure.
Trump stock.
Beloved banks.
Trump stock.
and just so many other companies, just general industrials.
Trump stock.
But what about the...
Not a Trump stock.
What about the no Trumps? I'm talking about the few genuine bear markets that have emerged since the election, or at least stocks that have a bearish face. Take technology. Many of these stocks have been on the skids ever since Trump got elected. At first, I thought that was because they were selling at source of funds by money managers, so they could buy many of the stocks that had gotten in favor, like the industrials. But with all the money pouring from bonds into stocks, I'm not sure if that source of funds argument is as central as I thought. Of course, there's another reason so much of tech might be down since the election. While Trump himself hasn't actually said much of anything about this industry, we know that tech CEOs have certainly had a lot to say about Trump. They've poked him. During the seemingly endless run-up to the election, the tech sector kept pushing the same message. Trump presidency, catastrophic for innovation. So if people took these business leaders at their word, you can understand why they might be a little afraid right now. I got a different interpretation, though. Silicon Valley is a Democratic Party stronghold, and many tech executives decided to play politics ahead of the election. And now that it's over, while they may not like Trump, they certainly love his tax cuts and his plan to let them repatriate some of those assets from overseas. In short, the Trump administration will probably be a lot less inimical to tech than many of us believe. And I'm less worried about these stocks being used as a source of funds now that so many investors are dumping bonds in order to get themselves some equity exposure. The group's been left behind. Today's a perfect example. Broadcom, the company created by the powerful merger of two semiconductor companies, Avago, AVGO, which is a surviving symbol, and Broadcom of old, exploded higher this morning after reporting a really fabulous quarter last night. Really good job by Hock Tan, the CEO. Going in today, Broadcom is down nearly 4% since the election, despite the fact this company still had a lot going for it. When Avago acquired the old Broadcom, they created a new titan of the semi industry, and the deal also helped them diversify away from just simple cell phones. Now the new Broadcom has a staggering 50% market share in wired net infrastructure, 40% share in wireless communications, more than 50% share in enterprise storage. In short, there was no reason to think the business was anything but amazing. And that's exactly what we found out when they reported. The stock soared up more than $8, and it's now trading above where it was on Election Day. And if you think you're missing the move, let me tell you, think again. Broadcom, 12.5 times earnings, incredibly cheap. I think the company could be prepared to make some more billion acquisitions, even after the Brocade deal they just did. I don't like to chase, but it comes in, you got to buy it. Oh, by the way, it helped this, move the stock of key customer Apple today, too. With that in mind, I want to look at some of the other tech names in the S&P 500 that have fallen farthest behind since the election and give you my personal shopping list. So I think many of these companies simply can't stay down for that long. Eventually, they got a rebound. And if you can buy them in a weakness, well, that's, you know, all the better for you. First, there's Salesforce.com. The king of cloud computing. It's down 7% since the election. What makes this move even more outrageous is the fact that Salesforce reported a fabulous quarter on November 17th. But at the time, investors wanted nothing to do with tech and nobody seemed to care. To Wall Street, these were Hillary stocks. They needed to be dumped so they could load up on Trump stocks. The truth, of course, is that Salesforce isn't anybody's stock. They'll keep growing like crazy no matter who's in the White House, courtesy of their visionary founder and CEO, Marc Benioff. Company's latest quarter marked a nice acceleration in their billings growth, and Salesforce looks like it's on track to become the fastest enterprise software company to generate $10 billion in annual sales, perhaps by 2018. As Benioff put on the conference call, and I quote, "No enterprise software company is delivering this kind of growth at this kind of at this scale," end quote. And with this pullback since the election, you're getting a chance to buy Salesforce at about $13 off its highs. I say you add it to your shopping list. Maybe do some buying next time it goes down. Second, we got Adobe. A stock that we added for my charitable trust just last month, as you might know if you follow along ActionAlertsPlus.com, our service about the trust. Adobe is the rare 1990s-era software company that's undergoing a major transformation. And yet its stock is down 4% since the election, even though its business is booming. Now, you know Adobe as a classic maker of digital media and marketing software, but in recent years, the company started making the switch from a traditional software licensing model to a kind of cloud-based software as a service model. It's so popular these days. Now, Adobe's killing it in the cloud. They're the new leader in digital marketing software, and the growth's phenomenal. As I told you in the game plan, be prepared for good things when Adobe reports next week. I think it's going to be a good quarter. I absolutely think it's worth buying some beforehand and some after in case it gets hit. How about Facebook? That's down 4% since the election. Granted, the company seemed to hit a speed bump that had nothing to do with the economy in early November when it reported a staggering quarter but made some cautionary comments about the future. However, I think people read too much into that cautionary commentary. It's not like they actually cut their forecast or anything. They basically just said this quarter was so amazing it'd be hard to repeat. Facebook stock was in purgatory. Yeah, right up until November 21st, when the company announced a monster $6 billion buyback. And while the stock is still well off its highs, I think this remains an amazing long-term growth story with lots of assets left to monetize, like WhatsApp and Instagram and Oculus. We own it for the Chapel Trust apps. I think it's worth snapping up some in this market-wide pullback right here. I mean, in this stock-centric pullback, and then we get a market-wide pullback, it'll be a great place to go. This is not some flybynight.com like those that led us to 99. It's a company with amazing earnings. And believe it or not, it's actually cheap versus its growth rate now. Next, you know I'm a huge believer in the video game thesis, that these games are one of the few genuine long-term secular trends out there with real staying power. Electronic Arts, EA, the gigantic game studio with all the best sports franchises out there, Madden NFL, EA Sports FIFA, EA Sports NHL, a big hit in Battlefield 1, World War I shooter that came out in October. Well, you think the video game stocks will suffer with people going out more now that the big bad election's over? I bet there are millions of Democrats out there who are immersing themselves in games. That way they don't have to confront reality.
Not a Trump stock.
Hey, I like it here. I know, speaking of video games, my absolute favorite has been Take-Two Interactive. You know that with Strauss Zelnick. It hasn't been punished at all. In fact, it's up 43% year-to-date. I bet it keeps climbing because at this time of year, hedge fund managers love to load up on winners. If only so they can show their clients how smart they were when they reveal their holdings. Here's the bottom line. If you were thinking of buying these down-and-out but high-quality tech names, today's action, from Broadcom, which rocketed higher, I thought was a real good sign. I think it should put you at ease. In fact, I think the post-election sell-off in names like Salesforce, Adobe, Facebook, and Electronic Arts has been a gift, which is why these stocks belong on your shopping list. Stacy in Missouri. Stacy!
Booyah to ya, Dr. Kramer.
Booyah, Stacy.
Thank you. It seemed as though they were starting to rotate back into the techies a little bit today. So I'm wondering if you think now is a good time for us to get back into them. And then I guess a similar vein, what's your opinion of Microsoft as a cloud service provider?
I think Microsoft made a very brilliant move in buying LinkedIn. I think that you're absolutely right. I think this price hanging around the 60s. I like your idea. I need to go to Alex on my home state of New Jersey. Alex.
Hey, Jim. How's it going? A big booyah from Englewood, New Jersey.
Love it. Right around the corner, man. What's going on?
So I'm looking at shares of Fitbit. They're down over 70% year to date. The third quarter was awful. And after some accounting adjustments, unit sales are flat. They also put guidance for the fourth quarter and sounded very cautious on the earnings call. So given the recent positive comments from Tim Cook regarding the sales of the iWatch and that the stock is trading at under 12 times next year's earnings, do you think now is a good time to consider initiating a position?
I think Fitbit's it turned out that market for wearables wasn't as big as we thought. And therefore, I think that maybe you get a January effect bounce, but I would not buy that into the end of the year. All right. Christmas is coming early this year, guys. I think Salesforce, Adobe, Facebook, and Electronic Arts are wrapped and ready for the taking. Maybe buy them on a pullback next week. Now, much more Mad Money ahead. With all eyes on OPEC, I'm sitting down with one of the top domestic players in the oil patch to see how the deal is impacting business. Don't miss my exclusive with the CEO of Cimarex. Then United Technologies' Greg Hayes had a lot to say when I sat down with him earlier this week. So much so that we had to break it up into two parts. I'll bring you more of our conversation tonight. And all your calls rapid fire tonight's edition of The Lightning Round. So stick with Kramer. We've been all over the oil patch ever since last week's OPEC production cut agreement sent the whole group soaring, particularly the domestic exploration production companies. Take Cimarex Energy, XEC, an independent oil and gas producer with some big acreage in Texas' red-hot Permian Basin, Oklahoma's kind of Woodford Shale, as well as some assets along the Gulf Coast. As you might imagine, Cimarex stock is on fire. It's up nearly 60% for the year and 17% just since the election. Now, this is an interesting one because when the company reported in November, the results were suboptimal. Management admits as much, but the stock's been roaring anyway because investors are so pumped about Cimarex's prospects next year. Remember, on Wall Street, we care about the future a lot more than the past. And with oil and gas prices on the rise, a new fossil fuel-friendly president in the White House, and Cimarex itself set to boost production next year, I can understand the excitement. So let's take a closer look with Tom Jordan. He is the president and CEO of Cimarex Energy. Find out more about where his company is headed and also where the entire industry's going. Mr. Jordan, welcome back to Mad Money.
Thanks, Jim. Glad to be here.
All right, Tom, you said something very interesting on a conference call that seemed to be different for an oil company, but the same for most companies I deal with. You said, we manage the company by rate of return. Why is that so shocking for an oil company and yet pretty much standard for everybody else?
Well, Jim, that's a great question. I think I would answer that by different companies have different time horizons. Some are private equity. Some are built to flip. They're looking for an exit point. At Cimarex, we have a long time horizon. We're trying to build a company of enduring value. We invest through the commodity cycle. So when we make investments at Cimarex, we understand the commodity can be up or down. We want to create real value, real measurable value for the long haul. So the ideal owner of Cimarex is probably a long-term holder because we're creating long-term value.
Right. Well, at the same time, you do something you said in the most recent conference call that you are very excited about. We continue to push the envelope in completion, optimization, and innovation. For those of us who are, for our viewers who aren't familiar with the technical details, what does that mean for Cimarex in terms of its break-even if it wants to start drilling right now?
Well, it's been an amazing couple of years, Jim. Since the industry turned in 2014 and the oil price collapsed, the industry has been remarkably innovative in getting more productivity out of our wells. We're taking advantage of the lowered costs as demand is lessened on the surface side. And so we're drilling wells today that are longer horizontal wells. We're getting them done faster. We are getting wells that have twice the productivity of what they had just a couple of years ago. And so today, to answer your question, Cimarex, with our assets and the quality of our assets, we look golden at a $45 oil, $2.50 gas world. We've gotten our costs down, and we have our well productivity to the point where we can make a very healthy living and get on a growth profile in that commodity environment.
Now, even as much as 3 years ago, would that have been just difficult to be able to say a $45 in that gas price?
Jim, if you'd asked me that 3 years ago, I'd said you're crazy. 3 years ago, if I looked at a $45 environment, I would have said we're dead in the water. And that's just a testament not only to Cimarex, but our entire industry has really been innovative and tremendously responsive. And it's, you know, you just want to say it's a testament to free markets, entrepreneurialism, and good old competition.
All right, let's talk about free markets, because now we have a soon-to-be president who has told me on many occasions that fossil fuels are part of the answer and that he is in favor of pipelines and he's in favor of drilling and wants to help the industry in any way he can. What would that mean for Cimarex? Because I know you take a long-term view. You may not need a president that's for or anti-fossil fuel, but this guy wants to help.
Well, that's a great question, Jim. Things that we will welcome in our space, we'd certainly like to see a little different regulatory environment. And I know you've had a lot of people on your show talk about this from various sectors. But in the oil and gas industry, we've had a flurry of regulations that hit on a Friday afternoon. They are complex. Often the local agencies that have to administer them don't understand them. And then we go into immediate enforcement mode. So what we're hoping for out of the federal government are compliance partners to work with us and not just enforcing these regulations. We can live with whatever regulatory environment that the United States wants to establish. But we're going to fully comply, but some of these regulations are horribly complex, and we look forward to a compliance partner out of the federal government.
Will Attorney General Pruitt be able to change things? These bureaucracies are very hidebound, but I know he's very pro-fossil fuel. Can it make a difference?
Well, I don't know him personally. I know people that do know him, and they speak very highly of him. And I think it can make a difference. I think we're very willing to honor any and all regulations, but it's the tone and a more of a business-oriented results focus out of our regulatory regime that we'd like to see.
All right, last question. We had Mr. Sheffield on earlier the week, old friend of the show, retiring. We had Rusty Brazil, and I know you know him from RBN. They're actually talking about there's so much oil here that if you really unleash us, not only could we be continentally independent, but it's possible that we could drive the price down ourselves if we do too much. Is that real? Are we capable of doing that?
Well, I think the U.S. independent producer has been remarkably resilient. I think that a lot of people around the world thought we'd be dead or written off for dead in a $40 or $45 oil environment. I wouldn't sell the U.S. oil and gas economy short on that, Jim. I think that Technology is still on the move. We're still seeing tremendous advancements and improvements. And I think you could see significant oil growth out of the United States with any kind of price stability. Now, it won't happen for everybody. Companies like Cimarex have outstanding assets. Not everybody can sit and answer your question that we're profitable at $45. But I think that what we've seen out of our industry in the last couple of years is a tremendous resiliency. We've got a great emphasis on technology. And I'm extremely optimistic about our industry's prospects in this new world of lower for longer prices.
Well, I'm extremely optimistic and have been for a long time about Cimarex. I love your balance sheet. I love your technology. I love what you guys are doing. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Jim. It's a pleasure. Thank you.
That's Tom Jordan. He's the president and CEO of Cimarex Energy. It's about the best we have. Mad Money's back in for free. It is time. It's time for the lightning round. Question mark. And then the lightning round is over. Are you ready, Ski Daddy? It's time for the lightning round. Question mark. Start with Frank in North Carolina. Frank.
Hey, Jim. How you doing?
I am doing really well. How about you, partner?
Well, pretty good. Look, can you help us with some good dividend stocks? I'm interested in BP and AT&T.
Okay, listen, BP, no. Look, it's not bad. It's just I like growth and dividend. I think AT&T will give you a little bit of growth and a little bit of dividend. That would be better of those two. Let's go to Joseph in Jersey. Joseph!
Hello, Kramer.
Yo,
I'm
yo.
Loving this Trump rally, and I hope it continues. With the rising interest rates, do I still hold on to paychecks?
Trump stock, Trump stock, Trump stock.
Simple enough. How about Jonathan in New York? Jonathan.
Hey, Jim, how you doing? It's Jonathan in New York again, and I want to know, how do I play Wendy?
I've been liking Wendy's for a long time, and I'm not relenting one bit. I'll throw in McDonald's, and let me give you ActionAlertsPlus.com name Panera. New Labor Department Secretary. Got a different idea about labor than the previous guy. Let's go to Graham in South Carolina. Graham.
Booyah, Jim.
Booyah.
Two questions for you. Do you think Clemson will win the national championship, and do you have a buy, hold, or sell on PayPal at the moment?
Well, listen, let's PayPal. That's the one I'm really going to have to handle. I think PayPal, we had Shadan Shulman on recently, under 40. I like the stock. It has not had an ability to be able to pass 40. People are buying all the real bank stocks now. They're buying the First National Bank of Trump, a.k.a.
Trump stock.
Bank of America. How about Jaleel in Texas? Jaleel.
Booyah from Houston, Jim.
Nice. What's going on?
I acquired Petrobras about a year ago, and there have been some mixed headlines about it.
Yeah, but I think you probably haven't done this report about a year ago. That Brazilian government changed. We all got stronger, and all I can say is, you know what? Not bad. PBR. It used to be only Pabst Blue Ribbon. And thank you to the River Tavern for over-serving me that Pabst Blue Ribbon the other day. Just kidding. It was just two of them. Let's go to Kenneth in Ohio. Kenneth.
Booyah, Jim. You're looking to buy some TransCanada TRP stock.
Trump stock. I mean, really? I like the stock very much. Oh, and that, ladies and gentlemen, is the conclusion of the Lightning Round.
The Lightning Round is sponsored by TD Ameritrade.
Welcome to Kramerica. Other people want to make friends. Just a sec. I have a problem.
Booyah, Kramer.
I'm stuttering booyah to start the show. And what be shaking with you, partner? It doesn't have as good a balance sheet as Barclays. It's better than Royal Bank of Scotland. Look, it's not the Cleveland Browns. Maybe it's the Cincinnati Bengals. And by 19th century standards, Trump, tame. Andrew Jackson fought over 100 duels. Actually killed a guy in an argument over a horse race. Kind of puts those tweets in perspective, don't it? Or to put it in the new language of this market.
Trump stock, Trump stock, Trump stock.
And?
Not to Trump stock, not to Trump stock, not to Trump stock.
Get used to those. We can all focus on investing in innovative medicines and...
So this is the very start of the assembly line. What makes this assembly line different, Jim, is you see these
carriages above. We actually took a lesson here from the auto industry and the fact that instead of building the engine vertically with people with ladders around the engine moving up and down, we've actually made the actual fixture here move up and down sideways 360 so that there's no ergonomic issues, so that you can access all parts of the engine much more simply. And again, that will take the assembly time about in half.
And fewer people, which is just the nature of progress. I mean,
it's productivity. Productive, but also more highly skilled.
Right.
So the mechanics that we have here today, the 1,400 mechanics we have on the line, some of the most highly skilled technicians that we have, I would say anywhere in America. These are complex pieces of equipment. I'd say it's like a Rolex watch, except it's a lot more expensive.
So walk me through what you're doing here. Why is this special?
And what makes this engine so special? Well, we talked about the gear set. Now, you can't see the gear in here,
right?
But it's a star gear system, and that's that gear system that's at the heart of, attached to the rotor, again, that allows the fan blades to spin at one-third of the speed of the turbo machinery. If you think about it, this engine's a lot shorter than what you typically see for a large jet engine because, again, all the work is being done by the fan up front, as opposed to through the turbo machinery.
Shorter means better for the environment. Shorter means better for
better noise, fuel. Better fuel, better maintenance.
And when you think about these things, this is not something we were not possessed by the idea of the environment at one point in our careers. But now, when we think about an engine and the advantages over others, you need to say this is better environmentally to get that order.
Well, it's just one of those things. It's almost non-negotiable at this point.
Right.
Customers expect it. Right, governments expect it. We have a commitment to, again, this is nothing new for UTC. We've been talking about sustainability goals for 20 years.
You can't get the engineers you want without that commitment, can you?
Well, look, you're not going to attract the millennials,
right,
by doing business the old way.
Greg, when we speak about fuel efficiency, when we speak about saving the, or at least trying to reduce the footprint of an engine.
Carbon footprint.
Yes. Tell me what it does for CO2s. Tell me what it does for just fossil fuel, trying to get away from it if possible.
Well, look, the key, again, it goes back to the gear, right? Which, again, all the work in the engine is going to be done by the fan and not by the turbo machinery. At least 90% of the work is done by the fan. You know, what that does is it allows us to burn a lot less fuel, right, reducing the carbon footprint. So think about that. That's the 16% fuel burn. In fact, if you talk to some of our customers, the airlines that have taken delivery already, they're seeing an 18% reduction in actual usage out of the gate. You know, we certified a 16%, but with the design of the aircraft, we're getting actually 18% better fuel burn.
And that's their largest cost.
It is 30-odd percent of an airline's cost is fuel. The other third is people. Every engine that goes out there will save the airlines about $1.5 million a year. That's real money.
So the airlines know that they want to go to the guy who has this engine. So Airbus is competitive to get those orders because they have this.
Right. So this again, is an engine that is done very, very well versus the competition.
Well, if I were Boeing, I would think to be competitive, I may have to take down some of the GTF.
Well, Boeing, obviously, there's going to be a reaction. Right? We talked about this new middle market aircraft that they're talking about. They're talking about a new 737-10. It's a very small market at the end of the day. You got Boeing, you have Airbus, and then you have some regional players like Bombardier, Embraer, and Mitsubishi. But for the big guys, the volume is all in the A320 and 737, so it's ultra competitive. And that's why that's the part of the market that we're actually focused on. We don't do wide-body engines anymore. We do narrow-body engines.
It's the narrow-body that somehow came into focus. Unbelievable. Greg Hayes, Chairman and CEO of United Technologies. Thank you for showing us around.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it.
Great earnings from a company called Broadcom, symbol ABGO, actually did trigger a tech rally. I gave you some more techs to buy. Now, remember, we got to get through this Monty Paschi thing. I am not going to minimize it. This is a $48 billion worth of debt bank. And if we dismiss it, then we are just being too glib. So let's see what happens Monday. Like I said, there's always a bull market somewhere. I promise you I'll find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer, and I will see you Monday.